the Appleys, Fleming Accounting, Mr. Bolton, attorney here. For Appley, Bezetta, Catherine, and Savers, and Thomas Fritz, attorneys from Rapid City. I understand for the Appleys, Mr. Bolton, you will be speaking for 12 minutes, is that correct? And Ms. Savers, you'll be speaking for 8 minutes. What about rebuttal? Oh, you responded, excuse me. Senior moment, you only get one chance. As you may also notice, we have had two disqualifications, permanent justices, and appointed the Honorable Gene Martin, a retired circuit judge from the Third Circuit who currently lives in Rapid City. And to my left is the Honorable Robert A. Miller, who is the former chief justice of this court. Here. Also note that we also have students from Stevens High School joining us for this argument. This time then, Ms. Garcia, you may proceed. Yes, you certainly may. Counsel, you want to?
That he had raped her many months. That Amanda was not with her father by accident. She was placed there after she had told authorities that she was being molested.
She was placed there by the North Dakota. North Dakota court.
Yes, she was.
Isn't that cut off?
Well,
Social Services.
No.
What was the North Dakota?
North Dakota was deprived of, first of all, any evidence that would have been recovered from that, which both North Dakota and South Dakota require a sexual examination. We know now that Amanda Foy's head is being penetrated fully, full intercourse with Mary Foy, an adult male. There is absolutely every reason to. That evidence was not presented. In addition, the fact that nobody.
But you say we now know, but when that custody dispute was going on in North Dakota, did we know that? Who knew that? I know Larry Forrest did because isn't he the one that admitted it on a chat room after all this, after she had died in the fire?
Yes, he
isn't
did.
Isn't that how it really came to the surface?
After he confessed to the murder, there was an investigation which had not been conducted. There was an investigation to uncover home movies of Amanda raping.
And the mother was living here in Rapid City.
And the daughter
and,
was.
And involved in the custody dispute.
The mother was involved. She was asking for custody. Now, at the time this all transpired, Amanda Foy said was living here in Rapid City. Father Larry Freud said was in North Dakota. Now, she was placed in Larry's care by the North Dakota Custody Court through a series of events.
Contested events.
Not all of them, but some. Yes, some very much. Now, it's fundamental, and teachers tell children this, social workers tell children this, parents tell children. Something's happening to you, tell somebody you trust. That's what Amanda did. Amanda told child psychologist here in Rapid City she was being molested. She was taken there by her mother because she was having some severe behavioral problems. We know now why she was having those problems, but Amanda's mother didn't know that at the time. She took her to a child psychologist here in Rapid City, Liz Thorne. She took her there because she was living in Rapid City at the time, summer of 1994. Amanda told Liz Thorne specifics about what was happening. She told her that her father would touch her with his hand when her pants and hands were down, that he would push too hard, that he would spank her with, quote, his stick. So Liz Thorne did what she is mandated to do. She reported that information to the South Dakota Social Services in Rapid City. We have a child to protect. Something bad is happening. Something bad is happening. You tell somebody in authority. And the law is supposed to protect you. Law in South Dakota says that when you receive a report from a mandated person, you shall investigate. And the word shall is very important here. As this court knows, shall doesn't mean please, shall isn't suggested, shall means you shall do it. It is a mandated ministerial responsibility. So was that done? No.
Was nothing done at all? I mean, if the report is it, are you telling me nothing was done?
No investigation was had by either South Dakota nor North Dakota. South Dakota knew that North Dakota was not going to be doing an investigation.
I haven't read the transcript, so I need your help.
What happened was, is after this report was reported to South Dakota Social Services, 2 weeks passed, nothing happened. This is a report of sexual abuse, which requires an immediate response because of the risk to the child. Everybody agrees on that. As it should. Nothing happens. Amanda's mother calls the South Dakota Social Services. She knows it's been reported to set up an interview. So they interview Amanda and Ann. Lisa Fleming, the social worker, comes out and tells Amanda's mother that Amanda didn't tell her anything that was consistent with sexual abuse. It sounded like Amanda was an angry child. No investigation is had. Now, they say the South Dakota Social Services says the reason they didn't investigate was because they believe that all of the abuse, sexual abuse, occurred in North Dakota and only in North Dakota.
There's no dispute that there was this abuse. There can't be. That can
there's no dispute.
There's no dispute about what the bad conduct of the father is.
No.
There's no dispute that this young girl suffered the consequences.
That's correct.
The dispute here is that summary judgment was granted. And you're telling us these facts, and we've read that. So what are you saying that the trial court erred, and why in granting summary judgment? Wow, he apparently, trial court said that, I think Judge Kurt said, no, there's no genuine issue of fact. Why was that error? I think we know the facts, but, you know, for some reason there has to be error here. What is it that you're saying?
That's correct. The court found there was no genuine issue of material fact in regards to the 180-day rule notice. Now, and that relates back to your question about what the facts are. Because that's important as to when the 180-day notice was given. Because these facts are horrendous.
So, and but I'll, the facts can't overrun what the statute says.
Well.
I mean, there's no question that they're really depressing things. But the 180-day rule doesn't hinge on what the facts are, does it?
Well, to the extent that they deal with fraudulent concealment, they do.
Okay. So that's what you're saying, there was fraudulent concealment.
Correct.
And you're saying the facts, the fact, knowledge were not, what?
I'm saying that there was
relayed on, or what?
If there was facts presented that there was fraudulent concealment, such as to toll the notice of claim provision. And those facts, these are the facts. This is a sworn testimony of Ann Purdy. And in it.
In what forum?
It's deposition. And in it, she says that when, what I just told you, that when she requested an interview done of Amanda, Lisa Fleming came out and told her there was no cause for concern, Amanda didn't say anything consistent with sexual abuse, Amanda sounded like an angry child. She later went back to social services and spoke with Wendy Cummings, Lisa Fleming's supervisor, and asked about the status of the investigation, about what was going on, and was told there was nothing there.
Saying that's an affirmative concealment, or saying that that's negligence, which this case is action.
I'm saying that's an affirmative act of concealment.
what was the last date of the act concealment?
Well, we know that in June of 1998, after Larry Froese had confessed, Amanda's mother went to the South Dakota Department of Social Services with law enforcement and requested their file and was refused.
So you're saying that was a...
Correct. Now this is evidence.
Did the Purdy is the mother, correct, and you're suing the social workers, as I understand it, on this fraudulent concealment. Is that right?
We are suing them. Yes, yeah. On the fraudulent concealment.
Okay. So now, was, and you talked about the child psychologist. Yeah. Was that information, and are you saying, provided to the, when the report was made, to the social worker, which, what her interview was, so that they knew what the child had said to this psychologist? Okay.
Liz Thorne called in her report to the social service.
And was it written and forwarded to him?
It was written up by the person who took the call in the intake worksheet. And in that are all the specifics that I told you. In addition, it notes that Liz Thorne stated to the South Dakota social worker that she believed in the genuineness of Amanda's claim. Not only was Amanda saying things, but this therapist was saying that she believed it.
Did the young girl's mother know that?
She knew that a report was being made. She was never given these details, but she knew that a report was going to be. That's why when she didn't hear from anybody for 2 weeks, she made a phone call to inquire what was going on. 2 weeks into her.
You spent most of your argument talking about failures or acts on the part of the clients. What about your clients? Do you have mother's intelligence? Explain. See with facts that obviously were something.
Well, I think those are all issues that you would want to present to a jury. I think we have to remember that we're here on a summary judgment motion. I think that you have to remember that what happened was you have a situation where you have a child who is making allegations. She's 4 years old at the time she makes the allegations, July of 1990. Then you have a social worker who was telling you, no, she didn't say anything consistent to me. She just sounds like an angry child. Then you have a supervisor saying, no, there's nothing there, you know, in response to what happened to the investigation. And you would imagine the mother's going to say, thank God. And you would imagine that she's going to let her guard down.
Help me understand something, kind of in line with that. You mentioned several times in your briefs that Bruin, am I pronouncing that correctly? Bruin Cumming?
Yes.
Assigned this referral to social worker Fleming as a courtesy interview and not as an investigation. Number one, is that supported by the evidence? And number two, is that significant? If so, why?
It is supported by the evidence that she assigned this as a courtesy interview. And it is significant because she had no right to do that.
Because her obligation was to investigate rather than conduct a courtesy interview, is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay.
There is nothing anywhere in the statute, in the laws, in the manual that says you can substitute a courtesy interview, whatever that is, for a mandated investigation. You simply can't do it.
But doesn't the jurisdiction official of the state of South Dakota need the state lawyers?
Not when you have a child that's going back and forth between state lines.
You're telling me a South Dakota social worker or a North Dakota investigator?
I'm saying that a South Dakota social worker can move to protect a child that is here in South Dakota.
Can a South Dakota?
I believe there are mechanisms by which they can facilitate cooperation between jurisdictions. Yes,
such as
a courtesy interview, exactly. And the courtesy interview is usually designed to do exactly that.
Am I correct that this, at the time this courtesy interview was directed, the child was actually in South Dakota?
Yes, she was.
So the child was not in North Dakota, although she was under the authority or jurisdiction of the North Dakota. Fair statement?
Fair statement. It's also a fair statement to say that Amanda was going back and forth between North Dakota and South Dakota. and that Larry Freusted was coming to Rapid City every other week to visit Amanda Freusted, of which that evidence was provided to South Dakota Social Services. Now they say that the reason they didn't do an investigation was because they didn't know that.
Then after the evidence, this came from the psychologist in that report to the state officials, wasn't there after that a custody hearing? Her mother requested change of custody in North Dakota. Where this information, what she had available, was presented to the North Dakota court?
There was a custody hearing, and...
And the court didn't change custody.
The court did not change custody.
And there was no appeal on it.
And there was no appeal on it.
Does that have any impact on this? I mean, it all went up to North Dakota, and they forwarded it up there, so...
Well,
where's their fraudulent concealment now?
Well, it absolutely has an issue on this. The court was not advised that there was no investigation to be done. The court was not given any evidence of the medical investigation. All that is supposed to be compiled from the Department of Social Services.
And you're saying that was laying down South Dakota Department of Social Services files while the North Dakota judge was holding this hearing?
While the North Dakota court made its decision, Amanda was residing in South Dakota.
Was the North Dakota court asked to consider possible abuse by the court?
The North,
in other words, was the allegation of abuse by the law raised?
Yes, it was.
Did the mother raise it?
The mother gave a sealed letter from Liz Thorne, their conservator, to the court.
That letter disclosed that there was abuse taking place.
That she, again, she was a therapist. She wasn't an investigator. She wasn't a social worker. Her job was to try and help Amanda through this situation. So she, in that letter, told the North Dakota court that she did not believe Larry Freusted should have custody, that she had concerns.
How explicit was that?
It was not as explicit as her notes were, which were never gathered by anybody, and she was never interviewed by anybody. I don't know if she knew whether or not intercourse was taking place. It indicated that she did not believe the father should have custody. But it also said that Amanda loved her father, and she did. And it also said, as a therapist needs to do, you need to reconcile this. As a therapist, it's not a situation where you break apart the family when something like this happened. It's her job to try and figure out how Amanda is supposed to deal with this situation.
Counsel, if I understand you correctly, you feel that the North Dakota court was not sufficiently advised of all of the factors. Is that right? And so when the North Dakota court made its decision on custody, it didn't have the benefit of certain information that was in the hands of Dr. Buzetta, right?
Yes, that's part of it.
And the court didn't have all of the information from any kind of an investigation by the Department of Social Services in South Dakota.
Correct.
Okay. So what you're saying is the court didn't have all of the information it should have had to make this custody decision. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct. And to put that even further, it didn't know that it didn't have that information. It didn't know that nobody was going to investigate. The only people who knew that nobody was going to investigate, South Dakota and North Dakota. And they chose to remain silent on that. They chose not to tell Amanda's mother.
Did South Dakota people know that there's a custody hearing in North Dakota going on?
Yes.
So you're saying they had knowledge of that and should have reported?
Yes.
Under that statute that's mandated?
Yes.
And you're also saying that they didn't act in good faith? Because if they acted in good faith in the investigation, then the court was right in not letting them.
If there were no facts that would lead somebody to believe that good faith was an issue, well, first of all, here are the facts that says that good faith is an issue. If you put this aside, then you have to look at what actually happened. Even putting this aside, which you can't do.
You have 2 minutes.
But under the 1983 action, I thought good faith was an issue.
Yes, and under qualified immunity under 1983. There's also a good faith qualified immunity under the state statutes, which
and
also...
you've got an 83 action here.
Yes, we do.
What's the role of Dr. Bezzetta?
Dr. Bezzetta was hired by Larry Froysted to provide a report to the custody court about the custody of Amanda. Trial court found that no evidence was presented to show fraudulent concealment or a lack of good faith. Here we go again. Is there evidence? Dr. Bezzetta's file. Dr. Bezzetta purposefully decided to exclude certain Larry facts. He excluded Larry's suicide attempts, but made mention of Ann's. He excluded the Larry's sexual history, but made mention of Ann. He excluded any comment about his interview with Amanda.
Did you depose him and ask him why?
Dr. Bezzetta has since died.
Oh. Okay.
So all we have are his notes. All we have, to define his good faith, all we have are these notes, which says he omitted facts. He omitted relevant facts to the custody court, which is supposed to decide the best interest of the child. Now, how is that consistent with good faith? At the very least, it provides the material.
So you're saying his notes contain information that his report submitted to the court?
Correct. And which
the only record you have of that are from his office files?
Correct.
Which relate to the interview?
Correct. That evidence was purposefully omitted from the court.
What did he do after the birth of his permanent seal?
Well, in a situation where you have a confidential relationship with which a physician-patient is, you don't have to affirmatively conceal anything. You can conceal by your silence, which is what he did.
Mother never had it. Patient-physician, I should say. Relationship with doctors. Mother never was.
Mother was interviewed by Dr. Bezzetta.
Interviewed? I asked, was there a physician-client patient relationship with mother and Dr. Bezzetta? Mother never hired Dr. Bezzetta.
She didn't.
So there wasn't a physician-patient relationship.
I don't know whether or not the hiring of a physician is what is relevant to whether or not there's a physician-patient confidentiality.
Time is
it was purposely. How do we, I know that?
Well, what we have is a notes, and then we have a report. Just by the mere fact it isn't in there, you say it's purposely.
Well, I can read you what his note says. Didn't include certain Larry facts. That's what his note says.
Said in the report?
In his file.
Can you tell me if Dr. Bezzetta was court appointed?
He was hired by Larry.
Okay, but the court said as long as you're interviewing Larry Froysted, go ahead and interview the family too, didn't
yes.
he?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel. Right, Ms. Bolton, you have 12 minutes.
Your Honor, the bottom line in this case is that Ann Purdy waited 6 years the first time she heard her daughter allege that her father was sexually abusive. She waited more than 4 years from the time she talked to the South Dakota Department of Social Services about similar allegations that her daughter made against Thorn before she filed a notice of claim or before she initiated her action. When she then initiated that action after the statute of she based her action on a claim of a good faith investigation by South Dakota Department of Social Services officials, which is statutorily barred. A 1983 claim alleging that South Dakota Department of Social Services officials had violated her daughter's substantive due process right to bodily integrity.
Would she help me understand the facts? How long did she wait after the murder learned that her
her daughter's murdered, Justice Miller, on the 31st of May, 1995.
When did she learn it?
Mr. Freistad confessed in 1998. I don't know exactly when she learned that.
Thank you.
But again, I think for purposes of fraudulent concealment, which is what her knowledge turns on primarily, she knew in 1994 exactly what the South Dakota Department of Social Services was going to do. Ms. Garcia told you that her deposition is the facts in this case. It is the facts in this case. If you look at page 53 of that set of facts, Ann Purdy says that she was told by Lisa Fleming, I am going to refer this to North Dakota. Words to that effect. She knew in 1994 that South Dakota wasn't handling this. She knew it was because they understood at that time that North Dakota had jurisdiction. Larry Freistad had primary custody. Had his daughter during the school year and had her during the summer months. And they understood that the abuse had taken place in North Dakota because Amanda Freistad told them that. They asked her, where does this happen? She said, in Daddy's house. So at the time they acted, the ESS employees had a reasonable belief that this was going on in North Dakota. As a result, they had a reasonable belief that they didn't have jurisdiction. And as a result, they, in good faith, conducted a courtesy interview. They talked to Ann Purdy. They talked to Amanda Freistad. They wrote that up and they sent it to North Dakota. And they told Ann Purdy that they were going to do it. They did not fraudulently conceal anything. She knew exactly what they were doing.
They sent a report about what had transpired here after this Liz, whatever report was. To their office, and they did the courtesy investigation or whatever at that time, and then forwarded it to North Dakota?
That's correct, Justice Hamilton. They forwarded it later.
So then are you telling me then where the ball was dropped or girl?
Facts here are undeniably tragic. I mean, I think the ball was dropped
know,
a lot of places.
I know, but I mean, you said it was in jurisdiction then. I didn't know that, and I don't, you know, information as far as on the other department, but do they make jurisdictional, have to make jurisdictional determination? In other words, you can have someone that's here in your state being abused and you can't protect that individual.
Well, ultimately, the way they protect is by an abuse and neglect proceeding and termination of rights, and that turns on the location of Larry Freistad as primary custody. He's in North Dakota. I think they have to make a jurisdictional determination.
Not where the child.
I don't think so, Justice Miller. I think where you're talking about taking a child away from Larry Freistad, which is the ultimate problem, could they potentially have taken the child on a temporary placement? Maybe. But could they have taken him away from Larry Freistad through a South Dakota proceeding? No way. He's not a South Dakota resident. Abuse and neglect isn't taking place in South Dakota. They don't have jurisdiction over Larry Freistad.
I thought there was some federal act that.
I'm not aware of any federal act. The only thing I can think of is in
the
general.
Of course, that deals with the situation. Is it your position that the conduct of your clients, the social services people in South Dakota, not only was not negligent or the like, but that it followed DSS policy guidelines? Is that your position?
I think, Your Honor, that it did follow their procedures in this ad hoc case.
Okay. And are these policies and guidelines part of the record to help us determine whether or not we agree with that?
No, Your Honor, because I don't think it's anything that's written down.
How can you have a policy or a guideline on an important issue such as this that is not written?
It's the pattern of practice for the South Dakota Department of Social Services.
Okay, so now the pattern of practice is does that vary from district to district, officer to officer? Or, how can we as a reviewing court conduct a meaningful review of what is an appropriate practice if we only know people in Rapid City are doing without the benefit of the policy or practice statewide? Or is there evidence of what the policy and practice is statewide that we can look?
There's not any evidence of the statewide practice, but I think in terms of meaningful review, what you do here is look at what was actually done in this case, because one, on the 1983 claim, we are in the Cheney country. This is exactly like the Cheney versus Winnebago County, where the United States Supreme Court said there is no substantive due process right to be protected from harm by a third party, in this case, Larry Preussner. We can all agree is the ultimate worst actor. And there's no evidence here that Amanda was in the custody of the South Dakota Department of Social Services in a special relationship, or that they created the danger by putting her in a dangerous situation. So that, in terms of meaningful review, takes care of the 1983 claim. In terms of state law claims, you look then to 26-8A-14, the good faith immunity statute for child abuse and neglect proceedings. And then you ask,
No, please finish your answer. I didn't want to interrupt.
You then ask, could Liz Fleming and Wendy Cummings have, in good faith, looked at this, done a courtesy interview, sent it to North Dakota, and thought that that was acceptable? And the answer is yes. Those two things take care of it.
And would your answer be the same, hypothetically, if the evidence was that this conduct was being committed by him against this child in South Dakota? Or would you feel that even in spite of that, you would have to defer to the North Dakota authorities?
If there's evidence that it was taking place in South Dakota.
In South Dakota.
I think we still have the same answer, because we're still in the same position in Cheney. The allegation there is that they failed to protect Amanda from Larry Freistead. It doesn't matter whether that takes place in South Dakota, North Dakota.
Yeah. Now, maybe I'm not making myself clear. I frequently don't. But let's say that the evidence was that Freistead was committing these horrendous acts against this girl in Rapid City. You're telling me that the appropriate conduct is still to do a courtesy investigation and tell the people of North Dakota, as opposed to taking the child into protective custody here in South Dakota and bring it to the attention of the local court? You're not telling me that, are you?
No, what I'm telling you, Justice Miller, is that the 1983 claim, there's no claim. To the state law claims, if you look at what Liz Fleming and Wendy Cummings did, is they interviewed the mother, they interviewed Amanda, and they found inconclusive evidence. When you find that, the case is exactly like Cotton versus Stange, BW versus Meade County, where you've got unclear evidence or evidence that goes both ways, and they decide not to do anything. And that's exactly what that statute seeks to protect is cases where people take a look at the facts and they say, well, you don't know if there's a case there or not, we're not going to pursue it. And so, I think that's what happened.
So it sounds like you don't agree with your opposing counsel. You see this as discretionary acts rather than necessary.
I do. I see how this is like Hansen versus Department of Transportation in that sense. Hansen, the DOT employees, had the obligation to put signs at the bridge crossing that was being repaired. But said that exactly how you market wasn't specified in this case. These employees have an obligation to look at the facts. What they do in response to those facts requires the application of their discretion and training.
So you're saying that they complied with the shall part of the statute that counsel referred to?
Absolutely.
I really think of a 1983 action. I've seen it. The U.S. Supreme Court held that government officers can be held liable as long as they had fair warning. Is this conduct at all impermissible?
That's Hope versus Pelzer, and there you're dealing with qualified immunity. You look then at two things. Was there
a qualified immunity in this case?
Absolutely. You look at two things with qualified immunity. Was there an allegation on plaintiff's complaint of a violation of the constitutional right? The allegation is that they failed to protect Amanda Freistead from harm by a third party. That's a shame. Go beyond that, then you assume that that is the allegation of constitutional violation, and you say, could they reasonably have believed? Well, at the time Liz Fleming and Wendy Cummings acted, the Cheney was the law of the land, and the Cheney is four square with this case, so they'd have qualified.
I want to ask you about some concealment. As Garcia says, the last affirmative act was DSS failed. Favorable to
evidence in, there were no affirmative acts of consent. And in terms of viewing the evidence most favorably, you also can't make affirmative acts in their testimony. Ms. Purdy acknowledges at page 53, that's line 16 of the deposition, she was told in 1994 by Liz Fleming, I'm going to refer this to North Dakota. She litigated the entire matter in North Dakota. This evidence was brought up. And she said at that time she was suspicious that someone had, quote, lied or twisted the facts, close quote. Even if there were acts of affirmative concealment, she can't sleep on her rights. She has to look into it if she has a suspicion that there's a cause of action. She clearly should have back in 94 when Liz, when she was told by Wendy Cummings and Liz Thorne that she wasn't going to go forward. And after the North Dakota procedure.
Counsel, I think you've indicated that the Department of Social Services, based on their courtesy interview, didn't feel that there was inconsistent evidence, and apparently didn't feel that there was an
I think if you look back at Lisa Fleming's testimony in her deposition, she said there was some evidence that there could have been abuse, and there was some evidence that there might not be.
So if that's true, then why would you think Ms. Purdy would be able to move forward on something that your people feel has got inconsistent evidence?
Well, I think this turns on whether you're looking at the investigation as cause of action against the DSS people or Larry Preuss did. In terms of fraudulent concealment, we're talking about whether DSS fraudulent concealed what they did. Purdy's cause of action is against us, not against Larry Preuster. So the question is, did they fraudulently conceal what they did in response to those allegations?
Time has expired.
One more. Do you concede that fraudulent concealment or deceit can not only be affirmative acts, but also acts of omission?
No, I don't. I think the cases are clear that you have to affirmatively do something to cover the facts unless you're in a trust relationship, which DSS wasn't looking for.
I refer you to the City of Aberdeen versus Rich, 625 Northwest 75.
Sure.
If I recall, the City of Rich, it was the city attorney who didn't disclose the relationship with the city in terms of handling some property and transferring property.
That's it was the city and the mayor involved in a transfer representing.
Right. And that makes it like the case from the Mitchell Law Firm where they failed to disclose computation of alimony. They are in a trust relationship. I'm in a trust relationship with Lisa Fleming and Cummings in this case. If I don't tell them something, I've got a problem. If I'm just a guy on the street, I've got to affirmatively cover it up.
You've got about 20 minutes worth of your 12.
Thank you, Robert.
Your time again has expired. Ms. Sabers, you have 8 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. I'll try to do my best to cover what I have to in 8 minutes, but as my time is short, I'm going to kind of skip over the facts and try and address some of the questions that have come to the court. Justice Martin, I believe you asked regard to the North Dakota court order and whether North Dakota court suggested that the mother be interviewed as well. Not only was that a suggestion, and as Ms. Purdy admits, the court went ahead and ordered the whole family to be interviewed, and as well ordered Dr. Buzetta to submit the report directly to the court. Also, with regard to the information before the North Dakota court, I can't exactly remember who asked, but there was some questions regarding the scope of Liz Thorne's letter that was sent to the court and what was the detail included. That letter is in the record. It attaches an exhibit to Dr. Lear's deposition and also other places. And you'll see when you read that letter that Liz Thorne specifically states that Amanda has told her that Mr. Freistad has used his hands on her private parts. There's no doubt that allegation was before the North Dakota court. North Dakota court had an opportunity to look at both that and the report filed by Buzetta. And as most of you and circuit judges know, we're faced with that difficult decision of choosing two versions of the testimony, and did it best to obviously make its decision there.
I didn't recognize that man whose deposition was
Dr. Richard Lear. It is in the record, and Dr. Lear consulted with Dr. Buzetta when Dr. Buzetta was interviewing the family specifically.
That was the psychologist.
They said they coordinated together. It was a referral just to get an additional opinion. And I did want to address your comments about the North Dakota court decision. I realize that we have not briefed the effect of that North Dakota decision, as it was not raised by the appellant in their brief. I would remind the court, as you all know, you can affirm summary judgment for any valid reason. That issue was raised below in the pleadings. It was not argued at the summary judgment hearing, but it was raised in Dr. Giuseppe's answer, the effect of that intervening North Dakota decision. Moving ahead to your comments on fraudulent concealment, I specifically wanted to address your comment, Justice Center, that
is this fraudulent concealment by your client?
Yes. The statute of limitations for wrongful death is 3 years, and we've raised the statute of limitations as beyond 3 years from the point of death. Ms. Purdy has attempted to avoid the statute of limitations defense by claiming that my client fraudulently concealed her cause of action, or more specifically, I believe her contention is we fraudulently concealed a breach of duty. With regard to fraudulent concealment, Justice Center asked a question about a confidential relationship. It is clear there was no confidential relationship in this case. It was a one-time interview. And if you read Ms. Purdy's deposition, it is clear that she knew at the time that this information would not be kept confidential. She was specifically asked that question. She answered that. She knew the information was provided to the court and not kept confidential. Consequently, show that there was an affirmative act designed to conceal. Poses that question, Ms. Garcia, they had no response, and she's raised no affirmative act at this point. I think that
do you concede that fraud or deceit not only be affirmative acts, but also acts?
I think that is true when there is a confidential relationship. Silence can pull the statute. When there's a duty to speak, and when there's specific issues of fact raised by the appellant indicating due diligence, whether you go down the silence track of fraudulent concealment or down the track which involves an affirmative act of concealment, it is still the plaintiff's burden in cases where fraudulent concealment is raised to come forward with specific facts indicating acted with diligence.
Your counsel's claim that your client purposely omitted critical information in report to the court. And I understand that your client was retained by the other party.
He was retained, and then there was a subsequent.
Did he admit critically, purposely?
He wasn't deposed. Yeah. He had been deceased previous to the claim. There is absolutely nothing in the record that supports those characterizations. And that's
so
exactly what they are.
That would be a circumstance.
Right, and the best indication of that, I think, is to look at Dr. Buzetta's file in its entirety. It's very easy to pull out two words from a handwritten note and try to make an argument
from
that.
But you say the complete file would reflect that there wasn't any concealment. Is that what you're saying? Counsel, if the court looks at the complete file, your client, he didn't conceal. He just made a report that any professional in capacity would have made.
That's correct. And
I think he has to exercise judgment, discretion on what he puts in and what he feels has some merit or credit to it. Not, huh? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's interesting that Richard Lear was asked this question by plaintiff's counsel, and presumably in an attempt to show that certain things should not be omitted, and asked whether pertinent information should be excluded. And quite adroitly, he stated that pertinent information is in the eye of the beholder, and psychologists are always asked to make these kinds of decisions. And that's exactly why we have good faith immunity here, because reasonable decisions, whether you negligently acted or fell below the standard of care, is not enough to defeat good faith immunity. is that you have to show bad faith.
Client relationship with your client. How does your client get in here? I'm trying to figure that out. Maybe I never will, but you know.
How does my client get here? After the allegations were made to Liz Thorne, Ann Purdy, soon thereafter, as her own testimony, wrote the North Dakota court by her own accord and asked them to change custody. She provided the sealed letter of Liz Thorne, and upon seeing this evidence, my client asked the court to have a second evaluation. The court not only granted him the right to do so, but then proceeded with an order that the family be investigated, whole family be interviewed, and a report be submitted. I'd quickly like to talk about diligence because I think it's very important in this case. They have to show specific evidence of diligence to defeat the statute of limitations. Everything that she chronicles in her deposition as omitted from the report in starting on page 73 of her deposition, are facts that she knew were missing when she received a copy of this report. She had a copy of this report right after the custody determination. She asked for a copy. She looked through the copy. She disagreed with it immediately. Her testimony was she immediately came to the conclusion that someone had lied or twisted the facts for this to come out this way. And she complained that allegations that Larry Freusted had been abused were not included. She is the one who told Uzetta that, and she did nothing in response to that. Therefore, she could not show due diligence.
Counsel, do you feel that Dr. Uzetta had an obligation to the court to give all the information pertinent to the investigation?
I think that Dr. Uzetta had a duty to review the information and provide the court with what he felt and was the best evaluation of the situation, and I believe he did that.
So your answer is no.
Maybe I better have you repeat the question.
All right. Well, the fact, if I read the transcript correctly, there was some information that he did not tell the court about, specifically that there was no mention of his attempt to commit suicide when there was apparently information in there that Ms. Purdy attempted suicide on three separate occasions, right?
That's correct.
And wasn't there also some evidence that Larry Freusted may have been sexually molested as a youngster?
That was information provided by Ann that Larry Freusted did deny on the second allegation.
Okay, but that was given to Dr. Brissetta, was it not?
By Ann Purdy, that's correct.
Okay. Do you think that that information would be pertinent to a court who had to consider a custody matter?
I think that Dr. Brissetta made an evaluation of the situation, and I think it is the plaintiff's burden to show that he did not do that and raise specific issues. She did not come forward with any deposition testimony that psychologists never should have bid information or whether that would be pertinent in an evaluation or not.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Garcia, you have 10 minutes.
Pertinent, relevant information for Ann Purdy, then it's relevant information. If Ann's suicide attempts are relevant to tell the court, then it's relevant to tell Larry Freusted. If not do so, it's a prima facie evidence of bad faith. That's evidence
well,
to say
that. Let me ask you this. If Ann told Brissetta, what precluded her from telling the court that Brissetta didn't put it in there because she's the source of it, to challenge the credibility of it? I mean, she wasn't precluded from doing that. Because as I understand, the record says that that information came from your client.
That's true. That particular
So she could have provided that information to the court.
And what happened was that both parties had agreed, just procedurally wise, both parties had agreed that once Dr. Bezetta's report was submitted, then the record would be closed. And the court would make its decision. And that's what happened. No further testimony.
Dr. Bezetta.
I don't. I think it's in a footnote. One place. Essentially, just to talk about Dr. Bezetta briefly, he looked, he found, and he deleted. Now he wants his court to say that that's okay, and he deleted. Now he wants his court to say that that's okay. If you're doing a custody evaluation for a court, it's okay to delete negative information about the parent that's paying you for that report. We don't allow that from witnesses. We don't allow that from lawyers. We shouldn't allow that from a psychologist, whose duty in this case and in other cases is to determine the best interest of the child.
Did he look to find and delete sexual abuse? Did he look to find and delete sexual abuse?
Did he look and delete? He omitted any information that Amanda would have told him, whether she confirmed it or denied it. And either one of those would have been important.
So Amanda told him that the father...
I don't know what Amanda. Content. I don't know what Amanda told him because Dr. Bezzetta did not find that to be information. I know he spoke with Amanda for a half an hour. He interviewed her for a half hour, and
nothing,
none of that.
Nothing in his report that has anything to do with sexual content.
There is nothing in his report that says Amanda confirmed it or denied it.
What is deletion have to do? She's presented. This case is wrong. So whether he deleted it, it's not important. It's whether the claim is timely.
It's whether the claim is timely, but whether...
And you're saying that they're asking us to count the fact that he may have deleted something. You have to rule whether fraudulently concealed this claim.
Well, there's two issues on Dr. Bezzetta. The first is the survival claim, of which the good faith immunity only applies. A survival action survives any time, it's any time barring of it. It's 3 years, but it's told for an additional year because Amanda was a minority. So that claim moves forward. There's no fraudulent concealment that has to be shown in order for that to move forward. The good faith immunity applies to that. What we're saying is that good faith can't be found as a matter of law on these facts based upon his report. That's the first issue. Fraudulent concealment only goes to the wrongful death claim. I want to talk just a little bit about Mr. Fulton's comments that Amanda's mother knew in 1994 that South Dakota Social Services was not going to investigate. She surely did not know that. There is no evidence, no testimony in the record that Lisa Fleming ever told her, we are not going to investigate this. By the way, we also know North Dakota is not going to investigate either. Nobody ever told her that. They did tell her, we're going to refer this matter up to North Dakota. And Ann Purdy assumed, as most people would assume, that there's some kind of procedure that you're going to follow to make sure something is done about this. Surely, you're not going to have both people say, nope, it's not me. Somebody's going to take the ball and roll with it. Someone's going to investigate it. And that's exactly what she thought. She figured there'd be some
referred?
Kind of... In September of 1994, after Ann says that she went back and asked what was happening with the investigation, there was a flurry of activity. At that point, now, you have to remember that July was when the report first came in. In September, Lisa Fleming called North Dakota, and then she typed up her courtesy interview, which had happened in July, and sent that up to North Dakota.
Not as timely as you feel it should have been. It was referred at some time.
At some point, that information was given. North Dakota sent back a letter saying, we're not investigating. South Dakota said, we're not investigating either. Close the file.
Just before or after the testimony?
It was immediately before, right around that same time period.
Did your client have any contact with the department in North Dakota? She only dealt with the people herself.
As to this particular report, she only dealt with
file any claim of inappropriate conduct by this father up in North Dakota and pass on that message.
Did Amanda's mother file the report?
Yes.
She didn't file the report, and Liz Thorne filed the report with South Dakota.
Did her mother ever ask if there be any after the custody dispute?
To follow up on it?
Yeah.
No, because again, her understanding was that it had been followed up on. Her belief was that an investigation had taken place. There was no reason for her to follow up.
The only reason I asked that is argued that the client sat too long.
Well, I think what Mr. Fulton was talking about was that she sat a long time before bringing the lawsuit, and as one of the points was made was that nobody even knew there was a murder until 1998. I think, Justice Miller, just to address your question about whether or not this court can have a meaningful review if the Child Protection Services manual is not in the record, and I say I believe you can because the law is. The law says you shall investigate. Now, contrary to what Mr. Fulton says now, that they complied with this law, testimony by Lisa Fleming and Wendy Boone Cummings clearly says they did not. They do not claim that they investigated. They did not investigate this. That is said absolutely, without doubt, in their deposition testimony. So while they may like to think that they investigated now, it wasn't done. And they both admit that. Again, to address the Cotton v. Stange issue as to whether or not this is one of those cases that can go by either way. Cotton v. Stange was a case that involved an investigation. Now, the issue there was that it was a negligent one. But there was an investigation that was had. Now, once you have an investigation, then you get to an issue of whether or not it's discretionary or not. When you don't even do an investigation, it's ministerial. Your duty to do the investigation is mandatory. So it's not the same as Cotton v. Stange. It wasn't a case where Lisa Fleming gathered the information and said, okay, now I don't think I'm going to pursue this. She didn't gather the information. Had she gathered the information, she would have known that Larry Freustadt was coming down to Rapid City to see his daughter every other weekend. That's why you do an investigation, to find out that evidence.
She didn't make a decision. She didn't have jurisdiction.
What she says is that she believed that all of the acts of abuse occurred in North Dakota. Based upon that assumption, they could not move to protect Amanda.
So she makes a decision. It's
ministerial as to whether or not you investigate.
As to whether you start an investigation. She made a decision. She was not hired to stage because of the residency.
She made a decision based upon the fact that she thought that all the abuse occurred only in North Dakota. And it wasn't really based upon where Amanda was. It was that all the evidence, all the sexual abuse occurred in North Dakota. And what I would submit to this court is that's why you do an investigation, so you don't assume that.
Essentially, she was just mistaken.
I think if all that she had to say as far as her good faith argument was, well, I made a mistake, then she can present that to a jury. Now, again, you have to ignore the fact that she deceived Ann Purdy. But if you ignore that and you only look at the fact that she might have been mistaken, then you have to look at, well, and then she continued in that mistaken belief after she was told by North Dakota that it was their jurisdiction. Ann Purdy testified that they came out and said that Amanda had not said anything consistent with Liz Thorne's report of sexual abuse, and she sounded like an angry child. Now, we now know, because we have Lisa Fleming's report, that Amanda did tell her that her father was touching her private parts, that there were indicators of sexual abuse. She said that she could fly, which is, as Lisa Fleming testified, children will tend to disassociate themselves. That's an indicator of sexual abuse. Absolutely. That's exactly what we're saying.
Counsel, do you know if, pursuant to a normal investigation by the DSS, that would include a medical exam?
Yes.
Time has expired. Court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.